Now he needs a water laser too, and he got it.
Exceptional dentistry, maximum comfort, bridges, crowns, teaching, bonding, doesn't matter. Your care and comfort is the chief priority, no matter what, for Dr. Roosevelt and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment. For the smile you've always wanted in the atmosphere that spells success, most insurance is accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 in Avon at the sign with the silver toothbrush. Easy parking and some evening hours. Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards. Call today at 674-0707.
Mentally and emotionally. Yeah, I will never say anything bad about the Junior League ever again. I will never make fun of them ever.
Till tomorrow.
But,
why is that?
Because they were very lovely and gracious and pleasant. And they bought many of my books. All of my books that were there. Every single last copy they bought. And clamored for more. So I have a soft spot in my heart for the Junior League.
Well, that was nice.
At their Noel boutique. My book did well at the Noel boutique.
You were actually selling things at the Noel boutique?
Well, they have like a little bookstore at the Noel boutique. And yeah. Where I was.
Where was this in New Britain?
It was, I don't really know exactly.
That's helpful. Yeah.
It's better not to know where you are in New Britain. You have a better chance
of
getting there.
Would it make any difference if you did know where you were in New
Britain? I think you have a better chance of getting there if you don't know exactly where you're supposed to be.
Can get in. You can't get out.
But anyway, it was nice. And Rebecca Lobo was there. And I had a very pleasant visit with her. And she's going to be joining us on the air. I believe Friday, November 12th, and she'll join us for Sports Artois and a little period after that too.
Long time ago, sound like Don McLean. We had a holiday store in New Britain. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, and
I do remember that.
Oh, thank God. I got directions to get there, so yeah. I went down the road and I took a wrong turn. I ended up in a gravel pit.
You would have been better off.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you're right. You would have been safer in the gravel pit than.
There were some rather primo locations there, now that I think of it.
This is the case where being with the Salvation Army, we needed all the salvation we could get that day.
Yeah, and an army.
Yeah.
Can we talk to John?
Oh, sure.
John, hi.
Hi, guys.
That's a good answer. Sometimes bookstores don't have the book. That's another problem. Actually, I will never forget, when he brings that up, it makes me think. You know, Men's Health, which is a wonderful magazine, and I've been a contributing editor there for years, but basically they have the same three stories on the cover every single month, you know? Basically, it's how to lose that gut, how to do it all night, and how to live forever. So I remember when I submitted this story, the essay to him, I said, unfortunately, this is not one of your three stories. But you might want to publish it anyway. And they did. They were nice about it. And now I'm writing for the Men's Health has spun off a new magazine basically for guys who are too old to read Men's Health. And then I think they've taken some of their writers who are too old to write for Men's Health. So the three stories we work on are how to hide that gut, how to live till next week, and how to do it once a month.
How to stay awake till 9.
Those are the kinds of stories. How to not be totally decrepit. You know, those are the kinds of stories we're working on these days.
This magazine is called Best Life, which is exactly the opposite of what it's really about. It's about, like, the worst part of your life.
It should be called Marking Time Until Death. Anyway, our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star WTIC. And you can call us about any... Well, don't call us about anything you want to call us about. There is this kind of... Again, he has new evidence that, that oddly enough, as far as difficult as this may be for most of you to believe, some of Governor Roland's other pronouncements regarding his involvement with Enron appear to be not substantiated by supporting documentation. And once again, you're just going to have to stretch your capacity for belief here, because this is going to be a difficult one for you to swallow. Some of the supporting evidence specifically contradicts Governor Roland's almost certainly truthful accounts of what he recalls.
Who would have imagined that?
Yeah. So we'll explain a little bit more about this as the day goes on. But basically, if you were going to buy that idea that he and Ken Lay were at the same party, but they didn't really talk in any kind of significant way, and nothing ever kind of developed out of it, you know, you're going to have another problem today.
522.
The stuff is in the Journal Inquirer today. It's a very lengthy article by Don Mychak. But, I mean, what it boils down to is that Governor Rowland has said, among other things, that he said, like, last month when this came up again, he said last month through his spokesperson, Dean Pagani, that he, quote, never spoke with, never met, and never shook hands with Kenneth Lay. He never spoke with. I would assume that would include, like, on the phone, stuff like that.
I would think that would pretty be all-encompassing regarding some sort of oral communication.
Never spoke with, never met, never shook hands with. Well, one of the emails that has sort of popped up here and all this Enron email stuff that's basically been declassified, if that's the right way to put it, Stephen J. Keen, the company's senior vice president for government affairs, writes to Ken Lay almost exactly 2 years ago, some good news. Your call to Governor Rowland was helpful. We are not finished yet, but we are on our way.
Huh. Maybe you didn't get through.
Yeah, that could be. It could be that he left a very helpful message on Governor Rowland's voicemail.
That may be exactly what it was.
And in his email message, Keene was congratulating Kenneth Lay after another Enron lobbyist, Steve Mantovano, had reported to Keene that, quote, it appears Governor Rowland is going to move this ball forward as he promised to do.
I wonder what that could possibly mean.
Yeah. And then there's also further evidence that, I mean, once again, Governor Rowland has repeatedly, over the years that this story's been swinging around here, said that he had no involvement with the runnings of CRRA, that he just, you know, didn't have anything to do with any of the stuff that they were doing. But once again, there's some evidence that Mychak has turned up that indicates that that he had given detailed instructions for this fuel cell deal that Enron and CRRA were going to do together, and that according to this memo, it's an Enron memo that says the governor gave his approval for the fuel cell project at least as early as October 2001 and made several key decisions about it, including whom in his administration would supervise it. According to the memo, the governor also insisted that Enron make the trash authority, which is CRRA, quote, a partner. So for somebody who had no interest in the day-to-day operations of CRRA, he certainly had an interest in making them a partner with the delightful folks at Enron.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is from the Journal Inquirer, which, from what I understand, is a sleazy tabloid newspaper of some sort.
That's the thing that he will say. So that, I mean, everything that...
How are we being characterized, pray tell?
We don't even exist, I don't think.
Small-time, 1,000-watt daytimer or something?
We aspire to sleaziness, but we can't even quite get there. You know, nothing that's in Mychak's story today, none of the significant stuff, is anything other than just stuff that he's found in publicly available files. In other words, there are thousands of Enron internal communications that have been made public in a federal investigation of the manipulation of energy markets in California. And so if you're willing to go in there and search around, I mean, you can just, you find this stuff. And so, I mean, all Mychak is doing right now is studying stuff he's been able to find on that basis.
Imagine if they're trying to hide something.
Yeah.
And he had to really look around for that stuff.
Right.
Assuming, of course, that there might be some kind of thing like
that.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, this is not... What they have today is not exactly a bombshell, but, I mean, it really... Nothing that he has ever said about this has made any sense at all. And I to this day, believe that Governor Rowland, when all of this was happening, didn't realize he was doing anything wrong. In other words, not only, I mean, with the fuel cell stuff, but... Well, I'm not sure he did anything wrong with the fuel cell stuff, but... You know, even with this energy deal that was disguised as a loan or whatever we're going to call it, I actually believe that he had no idea he was doing anything wrong. You know, I think that he had full knowledge of it. I think that he vetted it. I think he was just aware of it, as aware as he could be anyway. But I don't think he realized that there was anything wrong or illegal about it. But then, when he was asked about it, this is sort of the Howard Dean lesson. When they ask you about it, the best thing to do is say, you know what? It just never occurred to me we couldn't do that. Instead, he's sort of claiming it never happened.
I was pleased to hear from Richard Sugarman today, and who was kind enough to compliment us on our interview with Salman Rushdie, but also to say that Salman Rushdie said that he enjoyed being on the show. So we were sort of amazed that Salman Rushdie would even go on the show.
Right.
But he apparently had a good time.
Yeah.
He's thinking about going on Sports Talk, too. If he can work it into it.
That I can understand.
Yeah.
Sure.
But he won't be on the Buddy Vice Way show, because he's...
That I can also understand.
He said, look, I've been through one fat war already, okay?
That's right.
that's enough.
There's a limit. I've been through a fatwa, and to tell you the truth, I helped my book sales. I will never deny that, but I'm not going through that again.
We're sending this one out to the Rollins. And who knows? Who knew what a love shack that place was, huh? And actually, you know, this is going to be an interesting... This is, of course, a story by, I believe it's John Linder and Dave Altamari in today's Hartford Current, and on page one about the Band of Lake House. And,
yeah, but that's just a tabloid anyway, isn't it?
No, that's the Journal Inquirer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure they'll have something to say about the Current. I mean, put them down somewhere.
Well, no, because in fact, he has conferred legitimacy, Governor Rowland. Whenever he's attacking the Journal Inquirer, what he says is that one reason that you know that that they're a sleazy tabloid is that the Current doesn't run these kinds of stories, and the Current, the source of all legitimacy. He actually did kind of say that you know, you can tell whether it's a legitimate story or not. So this is a legitimate story
okay.
By his lights anyway.
Right.
And for people who don't know, basically, this is... this is a story that doesn't quite connect all of the dots, but it certainly puts some very interesting dots out there. And basically it suggests that quite a bit of work has been done on this house out in Banton Lake. Now, if you look at the permits, I guess they list about $13,500 worth of work. Well, if you've ever had any work done on any house, just eyeballing the list of stuff that's talked about in this article today, it's clear that more than $13,500. Either that or he is like the best contractor in the world.
New kitchen, heating system, stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's a hot tub and a deck and a, you know. And
you put a deck on, that's going to cost you almost that much.
And there's some electrical work and this and that. Well, anyway, there are a number of interesting questions. There are more questions, I would say, than answers at this point. Let's just start out with one thing, which is the story does contain what I consider to be fairly damning quotes from subcontractors who were told they could get work from the state if they did this work cheap. Now, the question immediately that comes to mind is, who told them that? Who told them that they could get work? And in fact, is there any way in which Governor Rowland would have known that? I mean, he's very good at isolating himself from that kind of information, but... That's number one. I mean, it certainly does look like the way everything else gets done. I mean, right already, Governor Rowland now has in front of him a situation that is almost perfectly analogous to the situation that his commissioner, Ted Anson, from DPW, was in. And he basically fired Ted Anson, or, you know, he said basically, you have the choice of resigning or being murdered in your sleep. But, you know, Ted Anson was sort of forced to resign basically over a very comparable set of charges. Now, there are so far some kind of differences, but not very many in these two situations. But, I have a number of things I want to say about this. Number one is, if I were the Democrats in Connecticut, I would be wondering what my response/remedy ought to be. In other words, they can't keep kicking this stuff over to the Ethics Commission because it's having Governor Rowland get fined or making him pay the difference in between what he paid and what he should have paid and all this kind of stuff. Because this is starting to look, if in fact this work was done way cheaper than the going market rate, well, you got a problem. You got a problem that has to be dealt with. And if in fact it was done way cheaper because the contractors or subcontractors were being told that they could get work from the state later if they did this work incredibly cheaply, and that's a gigantic problem. And so, I mean, the first thing that you have to say, I guess, is that forget about the Democrats, forget about anybody else. I would assume that the federal investigation that has been going on for quite some time involving the Rowland administration will be very interested in this article, and they pretty much have to. I was sort of feeling sorry for some of the subcontractors who spoke in that article because, although I don't see what choice they have, they're all going in front of the grand jury, I assume. I mean, they're all just headed there.
Yeah, but is it fair? I mean, using the standards from the governor here, is it fair? Nobody should even be looking at this. This is a family and a personal matter. This has nothing to do with actual state work or any kind of public stuff that's being done. So shouldn't this all just be ignored?
Well, it is on that basis that he refuses to comment about that. But of course, it's not. I mean, that's the issue. In fact, if they were doing work on state property right now, if they were doing work, for example, at the governor's mansion, which will revert to the people of Connecticut at the end of this whole sordid mess. That would be one thing. But in fact, what is significant about this is that it's private property. First of all, to tell you the truth, I just reading the article, I was reminded of what a sweetheart deal this whole thing looked like from the beginning. Arthur Diedrich was the chairman of the board of the White Memorial. Somehow or other, the White Memorial cut this thing loose. And I'm not saying that it was... I don't remember how it all worked out at the time, and I'm not saying that it was worth more than $110,000 in the condition that it was in right there, but, how many people knew that or had the opportunity to buy that house or, did everybody have an opportunity to look at that and say, oh, yes, $110,000? Well, I could throw $50,000 at this thing and immediately make it worth $225,000. Even not being able to get $50,000 worth of work done for $13,500, I could still flip this thing pretty fast. But anyway, that's a separate issue. This issue, I mean, it is. It's their private home, and somehow or other, people are working on it who think. One thing that is, I would say, not in dispute, if you read this article, the people who were working on this house thought that they were supposed to be doing the work cheap in the hope of future gain from the state. That basically jobs would be kicked over to them if they did this private work cheap. Well, that's illegal. That's conspiracy. If that's true, it's conspiracy to commit bribery. Now, I don't know who's engaged in the conspiracy to commit bribery. That's the next question. But somebody's engaged in conspiracy to commit bribery.
Whose house are they working on?
Well, they're working on...
Who's going to directly benefit from it?
Yeah, he's going to be... But see, he's very good usually. At least... I shouldn't say he's very good at it. But, it generally turns out to be the case that he was whenever this stuff was worked out or agreed upon, he wasn't there. That somebody else did this.
So somebody else is going to benefit from fixing up his house?
No, basically somebody else is doing this.
Well,
I
understand that,
yeah.
But...
Well, all I'm saying, I'm trying to give the governor the benefit of the doubt. And I think it is, to be fair, if in fact it could be established that people were doing this for his benefit without his knowledge, that would be meaningful. But on the other hand, if he knows that he's paying $13,500 or a lot, people know how much things cost.
Tomasos could have probably done this cheaper.
He seems to have a remarkable deficit in the area of knowing how much things cost, but. I don't know. This just looks like more of the same. It looks like more of the same, and it looks not only like the Tomasa stuff and the credit card stuff, but it looks like the, Ella stuff and the Alabozic stuff. It looks like more of the same. But, in some ways, this is a bigger story in terms of Governor Rowland, because all of the Tomasa, Ella, Alabozic stuff was going on elsewhere. It was state work on big state buildings that perhaps was being arranged for, Alabozic has already pled guilty to having taken bribes and kickbacks and stuff like that. So we know that that was done crookedly. But in fact, this is very different. This is work that is being done on private property owned by the governor. And you are absolutely right. He is the person who would benefit from it. I just want to say, Nora Danahy doesn't need me to tell her this, but this is, all of these people have to go into the grand jury room. All of these people have to be compelled to give grand jury testimony on this, including the guy from Waterbury, the electrician from Waterbury, says, I'm just doing some work for Johnny, and that's that, and I have to go now. Bye. Try saying that to the U.S. Justice Department, my friend, because they're going to want to know exactly how much electrical work you did for Johnny, and how much you charged him for it, and how much it was really worth. And, all of those people have to go into the grand jury room, and I would imagine that this is going to be a very uncomfortable thing. And so the right place to deal with this mainly is the federal government. They're already dealing with it. It's a slow, painstaking process. We might not see the outcome from this particular set of information for years, but that's who's going to be dealing with that. But meanwhile, if you're the if you're the loyal opposition, you might be wondering, doesn't Christopher Morano, the new chief state's attorney, doesn't he have this corruption in government, special, law and order, corruption in government unit? Doesn't he have this new well-established?
Well, there should be plenty of work for him.
I'd send him out to Bantam. There seems to be something going on out there, and so there's that. I don't know what Blumenthal will do with this. Blumenthal is now running around subpoenaing all kinds of people. I think this is
beyond the scope of the Ethics Commission, because the Ethics Commission has already had a couple of bites of this kind of apple. They already fined or otherwise penalized or charged Governor Rowland for comparable things. It just seems like, you know, an annoying repeat process. If in fact, and you know, nothing has been proven here. What has been proven is that there were subcontractors working there who thought they were supposed to do the work sheets of this. Now, so in some respects, that does seem to be a fact more or less in evidence. Who exactly was part of that understanding is something that the story doesn't make entirely clear.
Here is Paul in Hartford. Paul.
Oh, my God. Come on. You're being too rough on the governor. You know, you gotta understand there's a Christian summer camp up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was part of his spiritual sabbatical and reforming himself. So you've got to cut him a little bit of slack.
He seems to have not chosen the ascetic route of Christian contemplation, with the hot tub and all. Although, I believe St. Sebastian had a hot tub. I could be wrong about that. But, you know, when the spears and stuff would start to bother him, he'd get in the hot tub and feel a lot better. Just the aches and pains would go away for a while. So there is some precedent for that. You may be right. This may be part of his spiritual retreat.
Well, what about the bidding process? I mean, realistically, if work for government was so tough and they went and people would have to go through such a rigorous bidding process, people wouldn't be doing these sort of things to get government work.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind, one of the things we sort of learned as we went through this over the last few years is this thing called design and build, or design build, or whatever it's called, where basically you can circumvent or short circuit the normal fair bidding process. And I mean, clearly anybody who's been living in the state of Connecticut for the last, you know, let's say 8 years, knows that there are shortcuts to getting government work. And if you're a subcontractor, I would imagine there are even shorter cuts, because the bidding may go out to contractors, and then subcontractors can be hired, you know, on almost any basis.
Yeah, so, well, it's interesting. And, you know, I mean, I voted for the guy, and, you know, I looked at what Curry said, and he made a lot of credible statements. I mean, the people like Rowland and Bush, they're going to be known as the dinosaurs in another 5 or 10 years, because they did not invest into infrastructure. They did not reform government. They sat there and they saw their cronies and they saw these people line their pockets at the expense of social programs and infrastructure.
I would agree with all of the above. I wanted to say one thing about Bill Curry. He has not had his kitchen redone, or he hasn't had his kitchen done since basically fire was discovered.
After every UConn men's and women's basketball.
Yeah. Carol Mosley Brown is dressed as a giant tomato. Which would have worked good. It would have been great in the on that Monty Hall show. But,
well, let's make a deal.
Yeah, but in the debate, I think it was a good idea.
So how, did you see it?
Yes, I did. I watched some of it.
I watched the last one, but
my lips and tongue became numb and stuff, and I started to...
It really is frightening.
Yeah. Anyway, here's John. What does John want?
I know you said you're right.
What has John wrong?
Well, you know, I wanted to call my friends, and this is not your favorite conservative, Colin, but I wanted to tell you that I've heard your what you were saying about the governor, and if it's true, I think you're 110% right. I think the governor has seen his better day, and it's time to go. I'll tell you why, as a conservative Republican, why I'm upset with John Rowland, and that is because John Rowland does not want to build a bench in terms of helping along future Republicans within the state of Connecticut. We have 3 congresspersons that are Republicans, but that's the Washington scene. But he really doesn't do much to promote the Republican Party or to help new generation of Republicans, particularly within state government, bring them to the forefront. Now, unlike the Democratic Party, who has many rising stars, Blumenthal, Jepson, Malloy, Weisowitz, other than Rowland, who do we have, realistically, that we could put up against a Democrat? I don't think Rell could do it, and I think he frankly likes it that way.
It's been a common complaint. It's been a common observation among Democrats in Connecticut and a common complaint among Republicans that, in fact, the legacy of the Rowland/DePino, and I just think you have to put DePino in there. He was Republican Party chairman for pretty much the entire time.
Yeah,
has been, I mean, the last election cycle... Suddenly, I'm not so much talking about his last municipal election cycle, but, the last election cycle, suddenly he showed a little bit of an interest in helping out a few candidates. Not much, but a little bit.
But I would agree that, you know, they had an opportunity, they had a nice umbrella in which to build up the party, and they didn't do it. And his tickets, I mean, you know, tended to be full of guys who were lucky to still be at large.
Absolutely. You know, I worked out in the Munster campaign in 1996, and we couldn't get him to come to any one of our fundraising events. We even invited Vice President Dan Quayle to come, and there was no way the governor even returned our call. So it was very, very disconcerting, and... You know, I've called you up before giving you a hard time about it, but I think you're 100% right about this.
Listen, if you won't do it for a rising star like Ed Munster, who would you do it for? Who would you do it for?
Well,
when was that ever a mistake? Anyway, thanks for calling.
Well, if you're scared of going to the dentist, I have a great solution for you. His name is Dr. Jerry Roosevelt. That's right, Dr. Jerry Roosevelt, right there in Avon. He specializes in people who are afraid of the dentist. He's so dedicated to making your experience very comfortable that he provides headphones with your personal choice of music. Well, you bring your personal choice of music. Perhaps you bring the Keithsons in. So he's working on your teeth. You're listening to the Keithsons. You get it now. He's got state-of-the-art equipment and nothing but tender love and care for you.
A very small chair. A very small chair.
For the little people, yeah. So the future of dentistry isn't like it the way they fit, though. The future of dentistry has changed. Our already high standards of care have just been raised with the breakthrough technology of the new dental laser. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drills, no noise, no numbness. Dr. Jerry Roosevelt is delighted to offer the new dental laser to his patients. Quicker and quieter. The state-of-the-art water laser replaces the drill in most instances. Over 20 years of teaching and hands-in-the-mouth experience. Now the water laser, too. Exceptional dentistry and maximum comfort. Bridges, crowns, bleaching, bonding, it doesn't matter. Your care and comfort is the chief priority for Dr. Roosevelt and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment for the smile you've always wanted. In the atmosphere, it spells success. Most insurance is accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 at the sign with the silver toothbrush. Easy parking in some evening hours. Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards, call today at 674-0707.
Anyway, on a more exciting note,
yeah,
my new glasses. These are not my new glasses. My new glasses left L.A. this morning.
Left L.A.?
Yeah, they were out in L.A. right now. See, that's how
why?
That's how important my glasses are. They were out in L.A. this morning. They're flying...
Were they sent to L.A. or were they...
Perhaps at one part of the process of becoming my glasses, they were in L.A. Yeah. But they're leaving by Airborne Express today.
Yeah, but you've never had them. I mean,
no, I've never had
like
them.
You had them and then sent
them
to L.A.
They're purely theoretical, yeah. No, they've never been in my possession.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah. I just wanted you to know, that's how stylish I am. My glasses are flying here. From L.A. today,
yeah,
and I probably will have
FedEx or what?
Airborne Express.
Airborne Express. Yeah. Maybe one of these guys that comes in here will bring them right in.
Yeah. Maybe the guy who comes in here all the time.
Maybe. You just never know, do you? 448, this is the Bruce and Collins show.
Anyway, we have Lucidus for the next 45 seconds, and believe me, that's going to be plenty.
Hey, Colin.
Hi, honey.
Colin, I just thought of something.
What's that?
You know what would be great?
What?
I've been seeing these ads for this movie, Bad Santa.
Yeah?
You know, that'd be the perfect role for you.
Well, but didn't Billy Bob Thornton already have that role? Why do you think of me as a bad Santa anyway?
Well,
you know what? You want me to be.
No,
you want me to be a bad Santa. You want to sit on my lap and have me tell you you're naughty. Isn't that what you want?
No.
It is what you want. Come on. Don't you?
No.
That's what you want.
No.
That was your sick fantasy when you called up here.
And you have to have, like, the bottle of, like, the...
I'm disgusted.
You know, or something. The
I feel soiled by this conversation. I'm disgusted. You... Oh, I'm sick.